Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of In the Know with Kat Bobineau. Today, my special guest is Samiha Azim, and she is a product designer at One Medical. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, no problem. So, can you tell us what do you do as a product designer?
Short answer, I design. So I work at One Medical, and One Medical is a great company because I'm not just designing technology, but there's really this people service to it. So as a product designer at One Medical, my job is really to design solutions in healthcare that are relevant to patient problems.
Okay. So what made you want to go into tech and then to design?
So my dad's an engineer.
Okay. That's helpful.
Yeah. So I actually, my dad's an engineer, and I actually growing up, I was like, I don't want to go to tech. I don't want to be an engineer. I want to do something totally different. But I found my way into tech. And in high school, I would actually create websites in HTML and CSS, and that's where I learned. But I never really thought of design that I could actually apply my HTML CSS skills in tech as a job, and I could get paid for it. In college, I actually thought I wanted to go into policy making for technology. And then my first job out of undergrad was actually in finance. So very different.
Yeah.
This was at the peak of the global financial crisis, which is the best time to work in finance. And then I found my way into tech, and I love it. I can't see myself doing anything else.
Okay. So that's amazing. So basically you grew up not wanting to be in tech.
Right.
Then you were doing your own thing in tech, decided, like, I'll go to school. And so what did you study at undergrad?
So I went to Berkeley for mass communications and political science. So very different.
So, yes, yeah. That is very different. So mass communications, graduated, did finance, and now you're in tech.
Now I'm in tech.
Okay.
Yes.
So how did you bridge that? How did you get back into tech?
So I started working for a nonprofit on their digital strategy, and I actually started more on the communication design side, where I brought in my user experience knowledge. So I after the nonprofit, I started working for a startup where I did more of the user experience research, and I was like, oh, this is interesting, and I didn't actually know what I was doing. And then I looked into it more, and I started taking classes, and then I did a program, and I was like, oh, I can actually get paid for something that I enjoy doing. And then I went into more of the communication design side so that I could pick up those visual design skills, which then led me to going into product design.
Okay. And what, I'm guessing those programs out here, since you went to Berkeley, what program did you go into to learn?
So it was a graphic design program that I did. This was after I had graduated. And then I had taken a couple of classes through the Academy of Art. And then a lot of it was sort of just picking things up as I went along. And you know, a lot of it actually is hustling.
I don't think a lot of people realize that a lot of times when it comes to your education, but actually your pathway, your jobs and stuff, it's just getting people to know you and hustle and sell yourself.
Yeah, and you know, don't be afraid to just put yourself out there. That's what I did. I would just shamelessly reach out to people, and it paid off.
That's all I do with this show. I shamelessly put this out there, be like, anybody want to be on the show, and just see who says yes. So it's absolutely fine that is what you do. It's awesome. And so I know we talked off camera about this, and we can talk about it now. Is you are Muslim, right? Mm-hmm. And so how did you feel growing up as Muslim? You want to talk about your upbringing and how it was going into tech?
Yeah, so I grew up, spent a portion of my childhood in Pennsylvania and Texas. Very different from California. I moved to California when I was about 11. So, Texas not as much, but Pennsylvania is just, it's not, when I was growing up, this is in the 90s, it's not the most diverse place, at least where I was growing up. Ironically, I don't think people actually saw me as any different than when I was here in California. And that sort of difference came about sometime around 9/11. And so I was a sophomore in high school when that happened.
Yeah.
And I think what's often missing from that conversation of that tragedy is that there's a lot of backlash against Muslims. And, you know, a lot of us are very proud of being American.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, I never understood the backlash, you know, it's calling the whole barrel of apples rotten because you have one, you know, right. And you're picking at that one thing instead of having a conversation about it.
Right. And there are 2 billion of us around the world. Well, 1.5 billion of us yeah. around the world.
Right. Exactly. And so how do you feel now with a lot of things going on and the talk about being Muslim right. in America?
Yeah, especially in this election.
Yeah.
I actually think that things are worse in terms of the environment than when I was in high school around 9/11. And so I think coming of age at that time, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about what you believe in, what you don't believe in, a lot about how you approach the world and how you view the world in that lens. And so I do see that there is sort of a more toxic environment, but then there's also a lot of good in the world. There are a lot of really great people that have reached out to Muslims. And just as an example, in Australia, when there is, I think there was like a shooting at a cafe a couple years ago, and there was a woman who went and sat next to a woman who wears a hijab, and she was like, "I'll ride with you so you feel safe." And so I know there's a lot of good in the world. So just seeing that sort of counterbalance what you see in the media is pretty awesome.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad that you have that perspective, because I know a lot of time media likes to just show the negative, you know.
I guess that's what gets clicks.
I hate it. I refuse to watch a lot of television and news. Sorry. I know everyone's watching this, but I don't watch the news like that. But even just being on social media and some of the things that I see is always, well, not always, but a lot of times it's negative. And now it just seems like people are waving their prejudice flag and just being very blatant with a lot yeah. of their actions. And it's just sickening.
And also I think a lot of that comes from people who have never met someone who's Muslim or who has never come across one of us. I think if they did, they'd find that we're pretty normal and kind of boring and ordinary. Yeah. We have lives just like them.
Oh, no, I totally understand. My best friend is Muslim and she wears the hijab. So, you know, when we walk around, I've never noticed it. She's been this way since we were in junior high, so I've never noticed it. But now I see how people looking at
how
her
people,
and
right.
people are responding to her, and it's just like,
and yeah,
it's crazy.
And on that note, I mean, like 20% of diversity is what you see. So when someone looks at me, they don't necessarily associate me with my religion because I don't have anything that necessarily identifies me as Muslim unless you ask me my name or you ask me, well, what religion are you?
Right.
And so I, in that sense, I'm lucky in the sense that I don't get a lot of those looks or a lot of that backlash. But I'm not sure what's worse, just hearing people make comments and not realizing they're in the presence of someone who is Muslim, or just, you know, sort of outright
right.
racism.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't imagine, because, I mean, I can, being a black woman is not always, we don't always get the best out of everything, but I can't imagine which would be worse, honestly.
Right.
And do you find any problems or anything worth mentioning being Muslim in tech?
No, I actually, I haven't really, that's never been an issue.
Right.
I'm progressive in my religious views. So during Ramadan, I fast. And my coworkers are actually very supportive. All my colleagues in every company that I've worked at during Ramadan, they're like, oh, do you want some? Oh, wait, I can't eat in front of you. I'm like, no, that's okay. You can totally eat in front of me.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you are having a great experience. And what about being a woman in tech? How does that work for you?
So I haven't faced any sort of sexual harassment or anything in the workplace. I would actually say it's more in the conference setting where, you know, I've had people come up and just say sort of inappropriate things. I find that the best way to, at least for me, to solve that is, so when I was younger, I was more nice, where I would sort of brush it off or excuse myself. But I find that now, just sort of approaching it as a teachable moment is and just calling people out on, like, did you really just say that? Explain to me how this is appropriate in this setting.
And I'm sure that they just shy away from that question. Like, you ask them, explain yourself.
Yeah, they'll either turn it into a joke or they'll be like, oh, it's not a big deal. I'm like, oh, no, but it is. Let me explain why.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're using it as a teachable moment. And I know a lot of times we are hearing that it's not a lot of diversity in STEM. It's not a lot of women in STEM. And to be both a minority and a woman and being in tech, you know, I from what I understand, because I'm not in tech, is that it's harder to be one or both in tech. And you haven't experienced that, right?
I haven't, in terms of like ethnic diversity or me being a minority, I haven't really faced that as an issue. In terms of me being a woman, certainly there are, you're absolutely right, the gender, there's a huge gender imbalance in technology, specifically in the product side of the organization. So at One Medical, we actually strive for diversity, and we look at diversity in a multifaceted way. So it, to us, it's not just, when we think about hiring, it's not just ethnic diversity or gender diversity, but, and I think I mentioned earlier, 20% of diversity is what you see. Mm-hmm. But diversity comes in, you know, sexual orientation, how someone grew up, their economic background. And so we, 33%, about a third of our engineering team is actually women, which is, I think the industry is average is like 10 to 15% or something.
Way lower than
that. Yeah. Our CTO is a woman.
Okay.
Our chief technology officer. And so it's, and the reason why we strive for diversity is, well, one, it's the ethical, it's the right thing to do.
Right.
It's the ethical thing to do. And two, it also makes business sense. We have a diverse patient population. Mm-hmm. And in order to serve them, we need to strive for diversity in our hiring, both on the product side as well as the medical side of the organization.
That's really good. I don't know much about One Medical, but it sounds like they're really striving to be different from the norm, but in a good way, you know, into having this diversity. Yeah. And having that conversation. So it sounds like you found a really good place to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but let's go back a little bit and talk more about you. So, may I ask, what is your dad's title as an engineer?
That's a good question. I believe he works on hardware engineering. So it's designing computer chips.
Okay.
So he actually doesn't design the computer chips because he's more of a managerial role. But I think it's director of something, something engineering.
Okay, cool. And so growing up with him as an engineer, did he try and instill in you engineering's the way to go, or like take you to work with him and introduce you to engineering? What part of that did he do? And then what part made you be like, I don't want to be an engineer?
So when I was really young, this is about 4 or 5 years old, I'd be like, I want to be just like my dad. I want to be an engineer. And so it wasn't until I started getting older in like junior high and high school where I was like, I don't want to be an engineer. And I think part of that is because in like the, so let's see, junior high school was like 2000s or early 2000s. So you didn't really think of engineering as, oh, that's something that I could totally go into just as a woman. Because when you look around at who are like the people that, what is sort of like that stereotype of an engineer, you think
right.
Male.
Right.
And typically white male.
Mm-hmm.
So what I didn't realize was that engineering is one part of developing products, but then there's product management, and then there's product design. You could be a data analyst, or you could work in as a product specialist. There are many other parts of developing a product that I found out as I worked in tech and as I started to sort of discover design as a field.
Okay. And so that's an interesting thing that you said, is like you're in high school and you're looking at engineering, and it's like, there's no women there. I don't see myself.
I actually took two computer science classes in high school. And one of them, we had this prerequisite where you have to take a semester of one of two computer classes. One was either you take this programming class, and then the other was you can take a class on how to use Microsoft Word and all these other softwares. And I was like, I don't need that.
Yeah.
So I took the computer, the programming class, and then the following year that qualified me for being able to take AP Computer Science, and I was one of four women in that class of, I think there were like 30 students.
Wow. One of four. And I mean, that's exactly why I do this, is because, you know, that people don't realize that kids don't want to be what they don't see. You know, and even for you, you didn't see a lot of women in engineering. Like, well, that's not my field, because it's typically going to be a white male in that field. And then taking a computer course and you being one of four women out of 30-something students, and I'm sure the teacher was a male. Was the teacher male?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's kind of hard to see yourself in this type of position. But then you still went about a roundabout way of still going into
very
tech.
Roundabout way. In elementary, I wanted to be Secretary of State because Madeleine Albright was Secretary of State at the time.
I mean, but that's the thing. No, you saw a woman in there doing this,
like,
awesome
I could be
job.
Done.
And it's like, okay, well, she's Secretary of State. I'm going to be Secretary of State, which is awesome. And but then you went into mass communications. And how did you feel about mass communication? Like, what brought you, or what made you want to take that type of course?
So, when I had first started, this was end of high school, beginning of undergrad, I thought I wanted to go into journalism. And part of that is actually having sort of come of age right around 9/11 and after 9/11, where I would see all these articles and you know, what people read in the media, especially then where there really wasn't social media,
yeah,
where you could get other views, what people read and what they're exposed to can often have profound implications of how it shapes their worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to be part of that conversation that shaped the worldview on how people viewed me and how
right.
people viewed other Muslims.
Right.
And so I'd initially decided, well, I want to be a journalist. And then from there, I was like, well, you know, policy is interesting.
Okay. And so you wanted to make sure that your voice was a voice of a different look at what's happening, especially around 9/11
right.
and all the prejudice and stuff that came from there. And so you changed kind of, well, I'm guessing midway or so during mass communications, was like, policy sounds like a good...
Yeah, so communications, political science, that's where that sort of came in.
Okay, and then you graduated and did finance.
Yeah.
I mean, how did that transpire? It was just like the first job you got?
Yeah, so it was, I had received an offer from a financial firm and then an offer from a tech company. And so this is a very important lesson that I learned early on, which I'm so glad I learned it early on. But the finance company or the finance job paid more, and so I took that job, and then I was like, I'm not passionate about this at all. There's some people that are very passionate about money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of them.
Yeah. I'm not either.
So
not to say I don't like money. I do, but I'm just not that passionate about chasing
of
it.
Just yeah. And so that sort of led me to finance. Mm-hmm. and I was like, this is, and it was at the peak of a global financial crisis. I was like, I'm not excited about this. I don't want to be part of the most hated industry in the world.
So when did you decide to change and leave finance and start doing something that you really were passionate about?
Before Lehman Brothers fell. So I had left finance and I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. And, I think one of the things that you often don't realize when, you're in your early 20s is that it's okay to not know exactly what you want to do. You have many decades ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started working with this nonprofit. They had almost no presence online. They had a website, and then they had no social media presence and not a lot in terms of graphics. And so I worked with them and I was like, hey, you guys do a lot of great fundraising offline, but you should consider online because that's where people are all the time. And it's also less expensive to use a digital platform in order to fundraise. So I worked with them on that, which then led me to working with a small startup. And that's where I started doing more user research. And so my career in design actually started off on more of the research side. And then I shifted more and more towards interaction design or product design.
Okay, cool. So now you're doing something that you are passionate about, and you see yourself doing this for a long time, or do you see yourself? Oh, okay, cool. Staying in tech.
Yeah. And
so what do you do? Now we can kind of change a little bit. What do you do outside of tech? Like, what are some of your hobbies?
I love to power lift.
Power lift? Yeah. Okay, I never would have guessed that.
No one does.
Which is awesome. I love that. So I want to talk about powerlifting. Like, how did you get into powerlifting?
How did I get into powerlifting? Well, I hate cardio.
Yeah.
And so I was doing, before powerlifting, I was doing Krav Maga for a little bit.
Wow.
I was like, I'm going to try this out. And then after that, I tried, it was like a bar class where it's sort of like ballet and a dance and yoga all rolled up into one.
Okay. That sounds San Francisco-y. Was it in San Francisco?
Pretty, yeah.
Yeah.
And then kind of got bored of that. And then I was like, I'm just going to join a. So I'd been at a gym before and then I'd moved. So I decided to try some new things. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to go back to a gym. And then I got a trainer and she introduced me to powerlifting. And I've been doing it for a little over a year now, or actually about a year. And I just hit a new personal record the other week. Deadlifting at 245 pounds, 5 pounds away from my goal.
Dang. I know. I can't even do like 150. Just, damn. That is good. That is amazing. So your goal is 250?
Yeah, and then I'm going to have to find a new goal.
Yeah, of course. Like, do you plan on doing powerlifting competitions and stuff like that? Because I know they have it. I've seen that.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it before, but when I saw that I hit 245, I was like, how much further can I go? Maybe I should compete.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So thinking about it, we'll see.
Then you'll be like, woman in tech powerlifter. Like, you have like all the titles going on. Well, I like it. I love it. I'm going to look out for that now. Follow you, see you do powerlifting. Do you do anything else outside of
Yeah, so just for fun, I'll do Arabic calligraphy because it's one of those things where it's like you're very focused on one thing and there isn't like a lot of context switching, and it's sort of an isolated thing you do, and you just like, no distractions or anything. So it's I guess kind of my way of meditating and doing mindfulness, because I'm probably the kind of person who needs mindfulness activities, but I just don't have the patience for mindfulness.
So calligraphy and Arabic calligraphy. So what do you do with that? Do you write cards for people, like sell cards or like make design?
No, but a few people have told me I should start doing that.
You should, because
I don't set up an Etsy.
You should, because I don't think a lot of people are, you know, like really do calligraphy. You know, like calligraphy is one of those almost lost arts. I think I could be completely wrong, but calligraphy is not something you hear most often that people are into. So to do calligraphy and then to do Arabic calligraphy, I bet it's like you can just put that online and people will just sop it up real quick. It'd be like extra money on the side. Like,
I should think about it.
I think that's really cool. Yeah. My handwriting sucks. So I just can't do calligraphy.
Yeah, my handwriting in English looks like chicken scratch. So I was like, well, that's out.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, you should do it. I'm pushing you to it. You should sell it and do it. It's really cool. So we're almost at the end of our time. So I just want to give you an opportunity. If there was someone younger who was interested in what you were doing and to do that type of work, if you had any like advice for anybody or anything you would tell them to do, what would it be?
That failure is okay. That you don't have to be absolutely positive about where you're going next. If you sort of have a general goal of, well, I know I want to do X for the rest of my life or in however many years, sort of having not getting there immediately is okay. But sort of laying out that path of, okay, I'm going to do this, and if that doesn't work out, how can I still reach my goal? Because there are many paths to mm-hmm. getting to that point X.
Okay. Yeah, I agree, because getting to your point, you've had a lot of detours.
Yeah.
So getting to it, and yeah. And if there's anyone who wanted to get in contact with you?
I'm on Twitter.
Okay.
My Twitter handle is at my first name, at Samiha, and that's Samiha.
Cool. Well, thank you. All right, everyone. Thank you again for tuning into this week's episode of In the Know with Kat Bobineau. Had a great show today, and make sure you tune in next week for our very next episode. Thank you, and have a good weekend.